Whatever funk the Nashville Predators were in earlier this month, it's now over. Last night, the Preds win 3-2 on the road in Detroit, their second win in as many nights, to take sole possession of the Central Division lead. The Preds return to the ice tomorrow night against the San Jose Sharks at Bridgestone Arena. Pre-game at 6, puck drop at 7 right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. This is Preds Insiders taking you up until 7 p.m. when Smashville Live will take over from Tin Roof on Broadway, as Braden Gall and Hal Gill are joined tonight by special guest Preds captain Roman Josi. So that should be a lot of fun. If you're still looking for something to do tonight, head on down to Tin Roof on Broadway, as Braden Gall and Hal Gill will be joined by Roman Josi on Smashville Live. Should be a lot of fun. I'm Ryan Porth, joined now in studio by Jeremy K. Gover, reporter for the Nashville Predators Radio Network. And Gover, back-to-back wins this week for the Preds to start off the week. 5-2 Monday night at home against Ottawa. 3-2 last night in Detroit. It certainly seems like the Preds are back on track after this seven-game stretch where they trailed more than they led.
It does seem like they're back, and I think that's a good sign, obviously, down the stretch. But I think nobody's going to really argue that in an 82-game season, Ryan, there's a lot of, you know, ebbs and flows and all that. We talk about that all the time. But for this team to look so good for so long and then to have a lull of, you know, let's just call it 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, whatever it may have been, but still get a lot of points and still find ways to win,
mm-hmm.
right? You look at the on-ice product for that 60 minutes, 65 minutes, whatever it may be, and you think, as a fan, you think, they should have been better. Maybe even the coaches were like, we should have been better. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you're still getting points, and every point's going to count come mid-April when the seeding happens. So for me, I can't really complain overall, because, again, if you look at the large body of work, I don't have too much of a problem with it. That being said, you do want to see them play their best every game, of course.
And I categorized it as a funk to lead off the show. However you want to say it, a lull, a schneid, whatever, in that seven-game stretch, they did go 3-2-2.
Right.
And even though they lost back-to-back regulation games on home ice last Thursday against Calgary, last Saturday against Detroit, you know, them bouncing back against Ottawa and Detroit, beating two teams that they should beat and getting four out of a possible 4 points is certainly big going into this next stretch of games where they're facing three potent Western Conference playoff contenders.
Yeah, that's the key for me, is that, yes, you have San Jose coming in, St. Louis coming in, et cetera, but you've got perennial playoff opponents coming in, not guys that are on the bubble, not, you know, these are guys that are going to be in the playoffs for them, you know, obviously, you know, we think, well, we're pretty sure, you know, going to be playoff teams. And so if you can, it's one thing to dominate the Ottawa Senators, who aren't really going anywhere, and you want to see that same level of effort in games. And I think we will, when you play teams that are third in the Pacific or are right behind you in the Central.
For instance, the February 1st game against LA at home when they spanked them 5-0.
Great example.
That's what you would want to see out of this Preds team.
Dominating performance.
Maybe one of these next three games, where tomorrow night you face the Sharks at home, Sunday morning you face the Blues, 11 a.m. puck drop, and then next week, Tuesday night at Winnipeg.
You can't – this. It's not a gauntlet, because you're not exactly playing Tampa and Vegas and, you know, all the best teams in the league, but you are playing, again, perennial playoff contenders. They're going to be in the playoffs that you might even meet in the playoffs, depending on how things shake out. So, it's very important to have those two games, as you mentioned, against Detroit and Ottawa back-to-back, to dominate the Ottawa game, play very well in the Detroit game, even though the score didn't indicate it was a domination, but they still played extremely well, and you got a great game from Juuse Saros as well. So everyone's pitching in, and the Preds are, you know, they're playing right now. They're trying to get to the home stretch, trying to get past that trade deadline distraction of like, okay, who's our team? This is our team right here. Let's go.
We'll get into Juuse Saros here in a couple minutes, but for me, the biggest positive over these last two games was Victor Arvidsson really establishing himself as one of the top goal scorers still with this Predators team. He's been a little up and down this season, but 3 goals in the last two games. He became the first Preds player to reach the 20-goal plateau this season. You know, he now has 21 for the season. And, you know, there have been times this season where he has absolutely proven himself after the 7-year contract that he got last offseason, and these last two games have certainly, you know, he's certainly proven himself in the last two games.
I mean, you can make an argument offensively now, not not in every facet of the game, but certainly offensively, you can make an argument that he put the team on his back. I mean, for those two games, because here's a guy who, as you mentioned, he's been not up and down all season again, like just production-wise, but on the score sheet. Yeah, on the score sheet, you know, he hasn't had the season he'd like. He wanted to, you know, kind of maybe do better than that 31 goals last year, which he may end up doing, by the way.
He's on pace for 28.
Right. So he may still get there. But the point, though, is still that he's got three goals in two games that were big, not in the sense of standings or in the sense of opponent even necessarily, but were big in the sense that, okay, how the season was going, the rut, if you want to call it that, because everything we mentioned earlier about getting points and all that, the rut, quote unquote, that they were in at the time, to have a guy like that, to have Victor Arvidsson on your top line just emerge as, okay, I will lead us, and then go out and get three goals in those two games, again, back-to-backs with travel, all that stuff. It's huge. It's just big, 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 and it just proves that this Predators team can find ways to win, whether it be individually or collectively as a group.
Well, I've said, you know, the biggest strength of this Preds team, just overall, if you were to put a blanket over this Preds team, is that they can win any game possible. They can win 2-1. They can win 1-0. They can also win a 5-4 game if the game dictates that.
They can come from behind 3-0 and win.
Just like they did last Tuesday against the St. Louis Blues, which, you know, was one of the most memorable comebacks in Preds history.
It was awesome.
I mean, the fact that, you know, you're down 3-0 in the third, they scratch and claw their way back into it, and then Forsberg scores on a penalty shot in overtime. Are you kidding me?
Exactly. Yeah, well, St. Louis thought they were kidding them too, but
well,
but that's just it. Like, this team's found ways to win, whether they are, again, up in this game. They can hold on to win games. They can lock it down. They can get way out ahead. They can eke out victories. They can use overtime, even in the shootout. Those days of winning games in overtime, that kind of worry the Preds fans, those are long gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so great to see that they're never really out of it. They're never really out of the game unless they're maybe down by 7 with like 3 minutes left or something, like something mathematically impossible, basically. They're not out of the game, and they can put their best foot forward. And what we saw in that kind of, again, quote-unquote, like slide, right, what we saw there is that when this team comes together and says, okay, enough's enough. The second period was terrible. Let's go win the third. They can win the third. I mean, they can dominate when they want to. And I wonder what that balance is like, actually. I wonder what the balance between cockiness and confidence is. Not that they have either one of those. I'm just saying that I do wonder that. Like, if you can get down by three and find against St. Louis and find a way to win the game, even though you're down by three with 11 minutes left to go and still win, I just wonder where that is.
I would call it a swagger. When they're playing,
so that's
well.
That is the balance, is the word swagger.
Yeah, when they're playing with their A game, they look to just have a swagger out there. And Peter Laviolette, over the course of the seven-game lull, whatever we're going to categorize it as, kept saying that his team is an honest group, that he can go in the locker room after a bad period and his players know it. It's not like they're sitting there thinking, you know, what is coach saying? Like, they know they played a poor period in the second period at Ottawa. They know they were equally as bad at home against St. Louis in that second period, and they responded.
It's interesting you say that, because I asked Yannick Weber that post-game, after they won that game against St. Louis. I asked him flat out, what was the message in the second intermission? Because I was curious to see if Coach Laviolette went in there and started peeling paint, or if he didn't say anything at all, you know, just like let it be in the room, you know. And he's like, no, he just came in and calmly told us what we needed to do.
Yeah.
And I was shocked by that answer. I was expecting something better, you know.
Right.
But it's true. It backs up what you just said. They are a team that can figure it out amongst themselves and look to their coaches for direction, not necessarily motivation.
This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover on this Wednesday evening, taking you up until Smashville Live coming up at 7 o'clock. Preds win last night 3-2 in Detroit. Victor Arvidsson, a big two-game performance, three goals over the last two games. He got the game winner last night, but Gover, another big performance last night, was certainly UC Saros. He was inundated with shots in the last two periods of that game last night. He made 34 saves in the win. He has a .942 save percentage over his last 14 appearances, and it's clear to me that he has bounced back from a shaky start to the season.
He really has. And, you know, I was one of the few people that stood up for him in the beginning of the season and said, look, these are not all his fault. So, yes, he's losing games and all that, but the team wasn't playing well in front of him. And then the goals that he was allowing, for the most part, not all of them, but for the most part, it was a deflection in front that no goalie would have a chance to get. Or it was a Stamkos ripper from the faceoff circle that, you know, nobody has a prayer to stop. It was things like that. And everyone was just looking at the, oh, they lost 4-2. It's Saros' fault. You know, he hasn't won three games. Like, okay, sure, he shares some of the blame, but he's not the reason they lost those games. So it is great to see him finally get rewarded in games that they don't necessarily play their best.
And I saw a lot of Preds fans on social media after Saturday night's game where they lost 3-1 at home against Detroit. The third goal was an empty netter, and they're like, why didn't Pekka-Rinne play that game? It's hard to win any hockey game by scoring one goal.
Right.
UC Saros was fantastic Saturday.
Fantastic. He was absolutely fantastic. And, again, it just shows that even in his losses, and what's his stat line, Ryan?
It's over his last 14 games?
No, just this season. It's 5-5-5. It seems like that.
6-5-5.
6-5-5. Okay, so he's 6-5-5. So you look at that on paper without watching him actually play, and you think, okay, you know, it's a decent season for a backup. No big deal. But then you look at his save percentage, and you're like, what? You know, like,
yeah.
He's playing that well? And then you look at the last 13 games, and you're even further blown away that the Predators are just an embarrassment of riches because, yeah, they've got this Vezina Trophy conversation guy in Pekka-Rinne, which we'll get to, I'm sure, later. But at the same time, then you don't roll out some, like, AHL backup. Like, it's actually, it's the future of the crease. It's UC Saros, who was just lighting it up as well when he gets the chance.
Well, speaking of Pekka-Rinne, we expect him to be in net tomorrow night against the San Jose Sharks, and he can make history tomorrow night. We'll tell you what that is coming up next. He's Jeremy K. Gover. I'm Ryan Porth, and you're listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome back to the show, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth joined by Jeremy K. Gover in studio tonight. We're talking Preds, taking you up until Smashville Live tonight at 7 p.m. at Tin Roof on Broadway. Braden Gall and Hal Gill will be joined by special guest Preds captain Roman Josi. So you will not want to miss that. Tomorrow night the Preds are back at it at home against the San Jose Sharks. Pregame at 6, puck drop at 7 right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And then Sunday, I guess you could call it prime time. It is the prime time game of the weekend on NBC. The St. Louis Blues once again visit the Nashville Predators. Puck drop is 11 a.m. on Sunday.
Early church service for those of you that partake.
So the Sharks and Blues will visit Smashville before the Preds go out on a four-game Western road trip next week. So before the break, we talked a little bit about Pekka-Rinne. And Gover, you wrote a story on thegamenashville.com detailing what history Pekka-Rinne is on the cusp of, and that is the 300-win plateau for his career.
The 300-win club is a very exclusive club. Only 33 goaltenders have ever.
Can you name all 33?
No. I could probably, if you give me a lot of time, which we don't have on the radio,
no,
but I could probably name about 20 of them. But
please don't.
Off the top of my head. But no, he would be the 34th goaltender ever to win 300 games in the National Hockey League. And I'm not really looking at my story, so if my math is correct, he would be just the fifth to do it all with one team. Now, Martin Brodeur is an asterisk there, right? Because he won like 700,000 games in New Jersey, and then like went to St. Louis and won like three. So he doesn't count anymore. But other than that, you know, he'd be like the fifth goaltender ever to do that with one team, assuming he retires a Pred, of course. And so it's just a very special club. And then, oh, by the way, he would also be the third Finnish-born goaltender ever to do it. Mika Kiprusov and Kari Lehtinen were the only other ones that have done it.
So tomorrow night, Pekka-Rinne, if the Preds win and he's starting, would get his 300th career NHL win.
That is correct.
And you talked to Pekka for the story that you did. What were kind of his thoughts looking ahead to possibly getting to 300?
So I was asking him the question. Thank you for asking me that, because I didn't get to put this in the story. So I was asking him the question of, like, what would that number mean to you? Like, you know, and he didn't want to get ahead of himself. So here, I'm talking to him, by the way, to give you some context. I talked to him around, like, win 289, something like that, 290, somewhere in that area. So he's about 10 away, roughly. And I asked him, I said, you know, what would that number mean to you, 300, you know, blah, 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 blah. And he said, well, you know, I just hope, you know, I hope it comes. And I said, soon? Like, you know, like in a couple, like this month, you know? And without hesitation, he stopped me and he said, I just hope I don't have to wait too long. He didn't want to get ahead of himself. Mm-hmm. Even in the moment, here I am. I'm probably the first person to ask him about the 300 club because I was, again, about 10, 12 wins ahead of it. So I was way out ahead, and I was probably the first person asking him, and he, without hesitation, just shut me down and was like, no, like I just don't want to get, you know, I hope it comes whenever it comes. And I was very impressed by that because he easily could have been like, well, hopefully, or made a joke about it. But he was like, no, he's like, well, you know, I'm not thinking that way. I'm thinking about the next game, and it was very impressive.
So whenever it happens for Pecorine getting his 300th win, it's going to be a special moment, whether it's tomorrow night, whether it's Sunday against St. Louis, or next week on the road. It's going to be special because Pecorine means a lot to this franchise. I mean, he's been the backbone of this team for almost a decade now.
Which is crazy to think about.
Yeah. I mean, his number 35 will be the first one to go up in the rafters.
Could not agree more. 2004 draft pick, drafted so late that the round doesn't even exist anymore. He's an eighth round pick. And again, to find a diamond in the rough that late, you know, a franchise goaltender, by the way, that late is pretty impressive.
I mean, during the Stanley Cup final last year, think about it. He was one of the big reasons why they made it to the Stanley Cup final. The first three rounds, he was exceptional.
For sure.
The best we've ever seen out of Pecorine. Now, games 1, 2, and 5 of the Stanley Cup final, he was shaky in Pittsburgh. He wasn't good. But when he made the save in game 4 on Jake Guentzel, the scrambling save that resulted in the finish radio call that was gold, when he made that save, the first thing that came to mind, thinking big picture with Pecorine, was that if they win a cup, they're going to make a statue of that save. Now, you know, now that that save doesn't mean as much because they didn't win the Stanley Cup last June, they're, you know, if they win it, it's going to be down the road, hopefully, you know, this June or next June or what have you, so that he can win it.
Or both.
But if he wins a cup in this town, they should absolutely put a statue outside Bridgestone Arena years down the road of Pecorine, because when you think about it, I've made this comparison. I think you were on a show earlier on in the season where I made this exact comparison. I mean, he's a legend in this town, just like Steve McNair was for the Tennessee Titans. There's a lot of parallels there. And Pecorine is a fan favorite. You're going to see Pecorine jerseys in Bridgestone Arena for years to come. And back in 2011, when he signed his 7-year extension, he was the first one of the big three at that time to choose to stay in Nashville.
And you got to remember that they were calling it the big three.
Yeah.
Ryan Suter, Shea Weber, and Pecorine were, quote-unquote, the big three. The brass called them that all the time because they needed to lock up the big three so they could move on to other stuff.
And that's all big picture with this Preds team. You know, when you think of Pecorine, the 35, no one will ever wear 35 again. He's about to win career game number 300. I don't know if he's Hall of Fame worthy. I think he still has a lot of work to do and probably a short amount of time in his NHL career to get to that status. He's in the Hall very good, and he's definitely whatever Preds Hall of Fame they create 30, 40 years from now, he'll be the first one to go in there as well.
He will be in the state of Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
No question. I think he is a Hall of Fame goaltender if he wins a cup. And here's why I say that. I hate the argument of, well, he didn't win a cup, like the Dan Marino argument, right? Like, well, Dan Marino never won a Super Bowl, but he's, you know, but he's just one of the best ever. But we don't talk about him with like Montana and Elway and you know, Brady and right, Manning, because he didn't win a Super Bowl. So I hate that argument because it's so flawed. But in this particular case, I actually think it applies. Curtis Joseph, who's a goaltender for the St. Louis Blues and Toronto Maple Leafs back in the 90s, has 420 something wins and is not in the Hall of Fame. Think about that for a second. So here's Rene on the doorstep of 300. Let's just assume, for sake of argument, he has 3 more years left in him, and he wins 350. He's all-time finish winning, you know, win leader.
He could get to 400 with 3 more seasons.
Yeah, right. But if he doesn't have that cup, how do you argue with him over Curtis Joseph? You see what I'm saying? So Curtis Joseph ends up becoming the argument. If Cujo can't have 420 wins and can't get in the Hall of Fame, unless Rene, because he didn't win a cup, by the way, then I think Rene has to have a cup to get in.
I think Pekka would have to.
I hope I'm wrong. I'm just saying that's what my, through the research of the story, I think that's what happens.
I think Pekka would have to have a cup and a Vezina.
That would work as well.
And maybe he gets both this season, because he should absolutely be in the Vezina trophy conversation as well.
He absolutely should be.
We've been talking big picture. If you go small picture and Pecorine just this season, his numbers stack up against any other goalie in the National Hockey League. I mean, Andrei Vasilevskiy for Tampa Bay leads in wins with 35. He's slowing down a little bit. Tuukka Rask has been phenomenal, but he's also been getting a lot of relief from Anton Khudobin up there in Boston. So, you know, Tuukka is probably in the conversation, just sheer numbers alone. And then you've got, other, you know, Connor Hellebuck, Frederik Andersen. I wouldn't put them in the Vezina conversation like Pekka-Rinne is.
I wouldn't, but I will counter that by saying that the reason that Tuukka Rask gets in is, one, he's a former Vezina winner.
Mm-hmm.
And he has won a Stanley Cup. I know that doesn't mean anything now, but I'm just saying perception-wise, okay? So among the media, right, who's voting for this thing, he's in Boston. It's a hockey city, right? So they're going to – and they're on the East Coast. And the Canadian media watches East Coast games more than anything else. So he's got all that going for him, let alone, by the way, that his streak that he's on didn't happen at the beginning of the season, and now he's kind of leveled off. The streak he's on is now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, what have you done for me lately? Well, he's won a ton of games lately, and he's playing his tail off. That's why I kind of put Connor Hellebuck. I worry that Hellebuck might make it in over Rinne, because Rinne plays in Nashville, and while they're on the major spotlight because of the, like, a final last year and they got a great team and all that, Hellebuck still plays in Canada. And for some reason, everyone in Canada and up north wants to think that Winnipeg is not the Atlanta Thrashers, which they really are. So I would give them the – I'm just saying. So yeah. I would just give them the – I would worry about Hellebuck's presence simply because he's on a Canadian team. That's how it is. In my opinion, that's just how it is.
With a strong finish, Pekka-Rinne should be in Vegas as one of the three nominees for the Vezina Trophy,
yes,
if not the front runner.
Yes, I agree.
So that's our conversation about Pekka-Rinne. And as a reminder, he could win game number 300 for his NHL career tomorrow night. He is one away.
So if you have tickets, do not miss the game. That's what we're trying to say.
That's your message to Smashville.
That's right.
Also, do not miss Smashville Live tonight at 7 o'clock with Roman Josi as the special guest. Braden Gall and Hal Gill will be hosting. Coming up next, it is Andrew Berkshire of Sportsnet. We'll get into the trade deadline, plus a noteworthy article on Preds prospect Elli Tolvanen today from The Athletic. We'll get into all of that next. Andrew Berkshire will join us next on Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to the show. Preds Insiders taking up until 7 o'clock. Smashville Live from Tin Roof on Broadway. Roman Josi joins Braden Gall and Hal Gill tonight on the show. You do not want to miss that. That's going to be awesome stuff. And thanks to Roman Josi for, on a day off for the team, agreeing to join Braden Gall and Hal Gill down there tonight and make an appearance in front of the fans. So that should be a lot of fun tonight.
He's good people for doing that.
Absolutely. So joining us now on Preds Insiders, Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover. Joining us, it is Andrew Berkshire from Sportsnet. Andrew, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So we're going to get to Monday's trade deadline here in a minute, but every season, once the trade deadline is over, the focus automatically turns to the playoffs. And, you know, with the Preds leading the division at the moment and coming off a trip to the Stanley Cup final, Andrew, one would assume there will be a lot of people picking the Preds to go deep once again. And that kind of lends into this first question for you. How many Cup contenders do you feel like there truly are in the league, and where does Nashville fit in that mix?
Ooh, that's tough because, you know, things kind of change almost every day right now this time of year. The last 25 games are super important for determining that, but usually there's about between 4 and 6. So in the West, you're probably looking at, you know, St. Louis, even though they've kind of not been as strong as early in the season. Nashville's in there. Las Vegas somehow is in there, you know, despite being an expansion team. And I think Winnipeg is in there as well. So you've got 4 out in the West. And in the East, you know, as much as Pittsburgh has come on lately, I don't think they're capable of a three-peat. That's, you know, just far too much in the salary cap world. But Boston and Tampa Bay are both major Cup contenders, and one of those two teams is who I expect to make the Stanley Cup final.
So looking at the trade deadline, Monday, 2 o'clock Central Time, looking at the trade deadline, the Preds are in the mix, or said to be in the mix, for a lot of the goal-scoring wingers without a lot of term left on their contract that are being discussed. Guys like, you know, Evander Kane, Rick Nash, and guys of the like. But I kind of want to play trade deadline rapid fire with you, Andrew, kind of going one by one with some of these names being put out there. Starting with the two players with the New York Rangers, who would be a better fit for the Nashville Predators, Rick Nash or Michael Grabner?
I think Nash is the better player, but considering return that's being asked and the cap hit situation, I like Michael Grabner. And Grabner also has a specific skill set that I think would work really well with the Predators, that insane speed that creates breakaways. Having, you know, Subban, Yossi, Ekholm, Ellis all sending out big stretch passes to Michael Grabner would create a fair amount of breakaways and a fair amount of goals, I think, for the Predators. So that could be a good option for them for a very cheap price.
From the Detroit Red Wings, who would be a better fit for the Nashville Predators, Tomas Tatar or Gustav Nyquist?
Yeah, I think Tatar is a more complete player than Nyquist. Nyquist is a good player. I have nothing bad to say about him. He's a bit swifter of foot than Tatar is, and you know that might make you think that he fits better with the Predators, but I think the Predators need somebody, if they're going to add at forward, who can create more scoring chances, and I think Tatar is that guy. Nyquist is a guy who kind of feeds off of his line mates, and he can be a good number two guy on a line, but Tatar can make a line, and I think that's the big difference there.
Who'd be a better fit for the Preds, Mike Hoffman from Ottawa or Max Pacioretty from Montreal?
Yeah, this one is really interesting because it's two guys having bad years. I think Mike Hoffman, what's interesting about him is he's a big perimeter shooter and he has a wicked shot, so he scores on a lot of those shots, but he doesn't generate a lot of scoring chances. Now, the Predators already have a few players like that, so I feel like you can only have so many players scoring from the same areas, and you've also got lots of shots coming from the defense. Max Pacioretty likes to get into the high slot, and that's an area that the Predators haven't exploited this year as well as they did last year, so I think he's the guy that they should target out of those two.
One name that we're not going to hear associated with the Nashville Predators is Erik Karlsson. So Erik Karlsson right now is there's a lot of connection with him and the Tampa Bay Lightning, and you mentioned the Lightning earlier, which is why I'm asking this. You said that Boston and Tampa are your kind of two front runners in the East. So if the Lightning were to acquire a guy like Karlsson and his ilk, does that sway the balance of power in the East for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Erik Karlsson is that level of player, and obviously I don't think the Lightning would be giving up any like roster players in a trade like that. It would be all futures. That would be incredible for them because I think their biggest weakness as a team is defense. You know, Victor Hedman is really good. Mikhail Sergachev is a good rookie, but he has some major defensive warts. Anton Strahlman is a really good player, but is not as good as he was a couple years ago. He's, you know, that aging curve hits everyone. So to bring in a guy like Erik Karlsson, who's even better than Victor Hedman, even while he's having a bit of a tough season for him, would be astronomical changes to the landscape out East and, you know, probably make them, you know, I think already they're probably the Stanley Cup favorite for most people in the league. It would make them far and away the favorite.
Speaking with Andrew Berkshire of Sportsnet. Andrew, the last question I have for you is, if you're the Predators and you look at this team around you right now and you say, okay, these are the, you know, 22 guys, 23 guys I've got some depth in Milwaukee if I need to, and Freddie Goudreau and maybe even an Alexander Carrier if I need to tap into my defense, which they shouldn't because they're carrying 3D, but go with me on this. So if the trade deadline comes on Monday and they don't do anything, but they add Mike Fisher and then they you know, a KHL season ends for Jokerit and Ellie Tolvanen comes over and joins the team, are you happy with that group if you're the Predators?
I think that you're, considering how good the Predators are, you're probably a little bit disappointed they don't add, but they are good enough to go far with that lineup. You know, Tolvanen, who knows how good he could be right now. He's putting up unbelievable rookie numbers that the KHL has never seen before for a teenager. So that's, you know, something special that they could add to the lineup. Mike Fisher, it really depends on what kind of player he is after missing, you know, three quarters of a season. That's really up in the air. And whether or not he ends up, you know, sometimes with veterans, coaches like to give them a bit more ice time than they necessarily should have. With Mike Fisher coming back, he should be the fourth line center. So if he ends up forcing less ice time to guy like Kelly Yarncroke, I think that's probably a net negative. But, you know, it's probably good to just have that center depth. They'll probably still have a good run if they don't add. You know, most teams, they don't necessarily need to add in the playoff run anyway. Deadline deals are usually a little bit overrated. But as like, if you're a fan of the team, you probably want to see them go all in while they have all these great guys under contract. So it'd be like until the end of the Ellis contract.
Andrew Berkshire of Sportsnet has been our guest. You can follow him on Twitter at Andrew Berkshire, and I highly recommend you do so. Andrew, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Andrew Berkshire of Sportsnet here on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Some interesting stuff there on the trade deadline, and we've been seeing a lot of scuttlebutt today on social media about Erik Karlsson and how Ottawa might be willing to trade him before Monday's trade deadline, which would throw a total wrench into the deadline and make this thing a whole lot of fun over the next 5 days.
Well, it'd be a whole lot of fun for Canada and whoever gets him. But let's be honest, if you're in Nashville watching TSN's coverage on NHL Network and the Karlsson trade goes down, not at the last minute, but like let's just say noon, I mean, they're not going to talk about anything else for 2 hours. I don't care. They're just going to let the trade ticker on the bottom of the screen tell you all the news because it's going to be an Erik Karlsson show.
The Nashville Predators acquired player X, but Erik Karlsson!
And look, and we're not ripping on the guy. I mean, you know, deservedly so. My point is that he's a highly coveted player who plays in Canada. He would be probably the biggest name moved on the deadline day. But on top of that, it is, you know, key demographic here is Canada, right? So they're going to want to know where their favorite son goes to play. I know he's Swedish, but I'm just saying, favorite son goes to play. Plus, if he goes to Tampa, for example, then that's just going to make them better. It's just going to be the story. And there's not going to be any teams like Columbus and Colorado that make deals. Nobody's going to hear about it for like 4 or 5 hours.
This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover on this Wednesday evening. And Jeremy, interesting story coming out from The Athletic today by Craig Custance about Elli Tolvanen. Now, Elli Tolvanen is becoming the darling of Preds fans, and he is never suited up for the Preds, never laced it up in the NHL. I mean, he is turning into, I never like to use the word phenom, because phenom should be saved for guys like Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby or Bryce Harper in baseball. Those are phenoms, okay?
Fair.
Young phenoms. Elli Tolvanen is 18 years old, and he just lit it up at the Olympics, though.
He's forcing himself into that argument.
He's not a phenom.
No. But I'm saying he's forcing himself into the hearts and minds of Nashville fans.
Totally.
Because it's not like, oh, this guy may be the savior. No. They just happened to get a guy at 30th overall in the draft. Or 29th overall. Last June. Yeah, 30th overall in the draft last June, who fell to them, who they had in their top 10 all year. And, oh, by the way, all he does as an 18-year-old is go over to Russia, play with Jokerit, and just light up the KHL rookie scoring records. And then he goes to the World Juniors and dominates there, which he probably should if he's that highly touted. But then he goes against men at the Olympics and ends up putting up 9 points in 5 games and leading the entire Olympic field as of this moment in scoring.
So Craig Custance of The Athletic, formerly of ESPN.com, Craig Custance is one of my favorite people in the hockey media realm, comes out today and says the Predators are expected to bring Elli Tolvanen over from the KHL once his KHL season is done.
Woo.
And he has a quote from Paul Fenton, Predators assistant general manager, in the story. And Fenton is quoted as saying, "We'll have a contract in place to be able to execute and have him come over here. That's the plan. Funnier things have happened. I don't want to say 100%. I never do that in our business. Yes, our plan is to have him." Paul Fenton talking about Elli Tolvanen, the Preds' 30th overall pick in June.
I really wonder, this is a genuine thought, I honestly wonder if how he played in the Olympics impacts their trade deadline strategy. That is a honest question that I would love to ask David Poile after the deadline. He's not going to give me anything now, but after the deadline's over and they've made their deals and he kind of puts his feet up and is able to rest for about 2 hours, I would love to ask him that. Has Tolvanen's performance at the Olympics in South Korea, did that affect your strategy because he had such an impressive showing?
Let's get into that next segment. How does Elli Tolvanen factor into the trade deadline equation for the Nashville Predators, and who are the top options for the Preds to acquire at Monday's NHL trade deadline? We'll get into that next. This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Don't that feel real funky, y'all?
Yes, David, you're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game, and you're listening to Preds Insiders right here on your flagship home of the Nashville Predators. Ryan Porth in the Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet Game Studios this evening alongside Jeremy K. Gover, who you hear on the Nashville Predators Radio Network as a reporter. Don't forget, the Preds are back at it tomorrow night against the San Jose Sharks in Smashville. Pre-game at 6, puck drop at 7 right here at ESPN 102.5 The Game. And don't forget, Sunday, special time of 10 a.m. pregame, 11 a.m. puck drop in Smashville as the St. Louis Blues play the Preds on national TV. NBC will be in the house. Doc will be in the house.
Ooh.
So that should be a lot of fun.
It's a guest of honor.
So that's Sunday. Monday is the NHL trade deadline, 2 p.m. Central. We talked a little bit about Elli Tolvanen last segment, and we'll get back into Tolvanen and how he should factor into this deadline for the Preds. But I want to go through the options for the Nashville Predators at the trade deadline. We start with Rick Nash. He has 18 goals and 28 points in 60 games this season for the New York Rangers. He was the number one pick in Columbus, has a lot of talent, but he's 33 years old, and he's slowing down, and he is a rental. Michael Grabner, also of the New York Rangers, has 25 goals this season with 33 points in 59 games. And Michael Grabner, we heard from Andrew Berkshire last segment, Grabner's specialty is speed, and he scores a lot of goals at even strength. The NHL is geared towards speed. Grabner has been a big contributor for the New York Rangers, 25 goals this season. He too is a rental. We look at the Detroit Red Wings, who the Preds just beat last night. Gustav Nyquist has 16 goals in 59 games this year for Detroit. He's okay offensively, has a decent track record in the NHL. He only has 4 playoff goals in 35 career games in the postseason, and his contract takes him through next season with a cap hit of $4.75 million. Also with the Detroit Red Wings is Tomas Tatar. He also has 16 goals in 59 games, just like his teammate Gustav Nyquist. Tatar is younger than Nyquist. He has less playoff experience, but he has more term left on his contract, which takes him through 2021 with a $5.3 million cap hit. North of the border in Ottawa, Mike Hoffman for the Ottawa Senators has 16 goals and 39 points in 58 games. He's on his way to his 4th straight 20-goal season, and he plays in a defensive system with the Senators, which might lead you to believe that he could break out in an offensive system. His contract takes him through the next 2 seasons after this one, through 2020, with a $5.1 million cap hit. Max Pacioretty of the Montreal Canadiens is having a down season, only has 16 goals and 35 points in 59 games. He is the captain of the Montreal Canadiens, but this down season is coming after 4 straight 30-goal seasons, and Pacioretty is under contract through 2018-19 with a cap hit of $4.5 million. And finally, one last option that I have listed here is Evander Kane of the Buffalo Sabres, 19 goals and 39 points in 60 games with Buffalo this season. No one will question the talent. Everyone will question the character. He's never played in the playoffs. He has a bad reputation in the locker room, and he, too, is a rental. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover. All right, Jeremy, you just heard me rattle off 7 names that have been mentioned as possible fits for the Nashville Predators before Monday's NHL trade deadline, once again at 2 p.m. Central. Of those 7 names I listed, Gover, which one stands out the most?
Mike Green. Okay, sorry, just kidding.
Mike Green.
Sorry, just kidding, because, you know, they need help on D. Grabner is my answer. He leads. If you're asking me to pick 2 guys, number 1 would be Grabner. He would immediately lead the team in goals, by the way, 25.
He would.
Not that that translates per se, but his speed definitely translates. His style of game definitely translates. And if he's a shoot-first kind of guy, you can put him with some playmakers that the Predators have, and you might have something there. And again, his return, right, the cost to get him wouldn't be as high as a Rick Nash, who you may get the same production from, by the way, because Rick Nash is older, right? And so his best days are certainly behind him. Grabner, however, is about 29, 30 years old, so he's in that sweet spot there as far as his prime goes. And then the second name, I would say Nyquist. I would say Nyquist is another pick for me because, let's face it, Ryan, with the Nashville Predators are involved, when in doubt, go Swedish. And, I mean, that's not, like, you know, a scientific way to, you know, prove anything, but just for me, I think Nyquist would be a great fit.
Okay. I'd be down with Grabner. much more than Nyquist.
Okay, fair. You asked me to pick two, so I'm picking two.
Grabner would be a really good addition to the third line.
I agree.
If you look at a third line, possibly with Michael Grabner, Nick Bonino, Callie Yarncroak, that line could do some serious damage in the playoffs. You think about Nick Bonino and his track record over the last 2 years, and then you have the speed of Yarncroak and the speed of Grabner. And Grabner has 25 goals this year, 24 of them at even strength.
Which is a great number.
That is awesome.
I heard someone say, this is hearsay, probably shouldn't even say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. I heard someone say that his numbers are inflated because of empty net goals. I have not done the research on how many of his goals are empty net, but I will say that when you have 25 goals, you're doing something right. And it's obviously a shoot-first mentality. So I think he has like 8 assists. So that would work really well on the second power play unit, for example. There's just a lot of pieces there, a lot of things that he could bring to the table that the Predators aren't necessarily missing, but they certainly could use on the depth side of things. Because, again, if they suffer an injury again during the playoffs, then it's next guy up. And if you've got a guy like Grabner who's on that third line waiting to move up to the second line, I think it would be a seamless transition.
I'd argue Max Pacioretty.
Wow. Okay.
Because you can get him for more than just the stretch run. He would be under contract through next season. And this is a point that Craig Custance had in his story on The Athletic today. And the story, as we mentioned last segment, is on Elli Tolvanen and the fact that the Preds plan on bringing him over from the KHL next month when that KHL season is over. And there is noise around Max Pacioretty. And this is the point that Craig Custance brought up in the story about Tolvanen and had nothing to do with Pacioretty. You know, there was noise about Tolvanen going into the draft last summer and the fact that he may not be the hardest worker. And that is one of the reasons why he fell down to 30th overall where Nashville got him. And Craig Custance points out in this story on The Athletic, the Preds tuned out the noise on Ryan Johansson. They tuned out the noise on PK Subban, and both have been perfect fits for this Nashville team. And there is noise around Max Pacioretty. But to Craig Custance's point, the Preds tuned out that noise and focused on the talent, focused on the skill. Max Pacioretty is coming off 4 straight 30-goal seasons. And Pacioretty, you add him to the second line, let's just say, that for me would be a better addition than, say, Rick Nash or any other name that I just listed off right there.
The good news is that Poile or whoever can call, pick up the phone and call PK Subban, who's right in their own dressing room, and say, hey, what do you know about Max Pacioretty? What can you tell us about him? Is he a good locker room guy, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. And you have a firsthand account from a guy who was with him a long, long time.
You could also ask Hal Gill in your radio booth.
You absolutely could. Alexi Emelin, if you...
Yeah.
Okay, so, but still, you have PK who will give you an honest, candid answer. Hal will give you an honest, candid answer with some years removed there. But they can find out, they can do the research there by just picking up a phone and calling somebody who's already in their organization. That's the good news. To me, I've heard rumblings that the two didn't get along. Subban and Pacioretty didn't really see eye to eye. And for that reason alone, I've ignored Pacioretty's name. But that being said, if they go to PK and say, hey, how was he? And he goes, oh, he's great. Well, then you can't argue with that.
Mm-hmm. So we don't know for sure whether David Poile will do something before Monday's trade deadline. The expectation is that he probably will, but you never know. If he doesn't, the Preds could add Mike Fisher and Elli Tolvanen to their lineup down the stretch without giving up anything. Would that be enough?
Yeah, I think it's more than enough. Because, yes, you don't know what Fisher's going to bring to the table, but you're also putting him in a limited role. He just wants to be along for the ride. He wants to help however he can. If that means 6 to 7 minutes on the fourth line, great. And then Tolvanen, you don't know what you're going to get out of him as an 18-year-old, but you've seen what he can do in the KHL, you've seen what he can do at World Juniors, and you've seen what he can do at the Olympics. You give him a shot.
Is what Tolvanen has done this year as an 18-year-old against men enough for you not to do something at the deadline?
Wow. I say you keep your options open, but I would say that you'd be a hell of a consolation prize. If you do nothing at the trade deadline because you can't, or the prices are too high, or you missed a phone call, or, you know, whatever the reason is, and Tolvanen is your consolation prize, let's just say March 30th, I don't know, making up a date, you know, and he can come over and play a few meaningless games at the end of the year to kind of see how he acclimates. Oh, yeah, that's enough for me. I'm okay with that. And if he busts, okay, he goes to Milwaukee. I mean, you know, like it's not the end of the world. It's not like again, he's not the savior, right? This isn't 2012 and Radulov's going to come over and save the world. It's not about that. He could just be his ancillary piece. And that's what you want him to be.
Gopher, we have run out of time.
I know. You asked me the hardest question of the hour.
I know.
At the end.
My bad, Gopher. I will not do that to you again.
That's all right.
This has been Preds Insiders for Jeremy K. Gopher. I'm Ryan Porth. Coming up next right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game, it is Smashville live from Tin Roof on Broadway with Braden Gall and Hal Gill and special guest Preds captain Roman Josi. That's coming up next right here on your home of Smashville, ESPN 102.5 The Game.